हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावनीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, the light in the back's all right, it's not disturbing.
Problem, Maharaj.
Huh?
It's not creating any problem.
Okay. Okay, so Paramatma Sandarbha Adhyayana 4 Adhikarana 3 Bhagavan is the highest aspect of the absolute truth. Right, so we're establishing then the position that you have Brahman and Paramatma, and then Bhagavan is the highest aspect of that absolute truth. So all three are the absolute truth, but Bhagavan being that's the origin. So you see, but in the beginning, in the Bhagavat Sandarbha, then you're establishing Brahman as the absolute truth, but that is it's the effulgence of the impersonal feature of Krishna, Bhagavan. But you're showing everything because that talks a lot about Brahman, how Brahman meets Bhagavan. And but at the same time is how then mechanically Brahman is involved in taking care of everything. Right? But ultimately it goes back to the person. Then Paramatma, this Sandarbha, then is how as Paramatma he's taking care of everything. Right? So as the Purusha avatars, he manages everything in the material world. And so that feature is there. And so now they're trying to take it to we're going to the Bhagavan platform. So then you see this emphasis on Vasudev. So then Vasudev means that, you know, it's the feature of Bhagavan, but Vasudev means he's not expanding his energies necessarily for, as so much in rasa, in the pastimes. Then you see is that there you have the, like, then those are expanded, right? And then you get, you know, the aspect of Dwarka, and then it'll be shown that of that, the highest is going to be Vrindavan. Okay, so then page 70. So then here will be, this will be the doubt, no? One finds many contradictions.
Maharaj, we should be the doubt. We should be the doubt.
Okay. One finds many contradictions in Pancharatra, such as one entity having many qualities and forms. Jnanaishvarya Bala Che Jamsi Guna Atmana Eva Te Bhagavanto Vasudevaha. The forms of Vasudeva have the qualities of Jnana, Aishvarya, Bala, Tejas. This is contrary to the Vedas. Sometimes one sees criticism of the Vedas in Pancharatra scriptures. that bums them out, right? Chatur shu vedeshu param shreyo na labva sandila idam shastram adhitavan. Sandilya, not attaining the highest goal in the four Vedas, studies the Pancharatra. So they'll take it as you're criticizing the Vedas, but then saying that high school is in a higher position and the knowledge you'll lose as that is more than middle school, you're not criticizing middle school. You're just pointing out the gradations that are there like that. But if someone's attached to the Vedas, then it will be criticism. Like you see Duryodhana, that if you did not 100% support what he said and liked it and really was inspired by it, you pointed out, well, maybe if you do that, but there might be this problem. Then, oh, you're against it. You never support us. You know, you always support our enemies. You know, so in other words, unless how are the conditioned soul he's thinking and what's value to him, if you oppose that, then you're opposing, you know, what he finds his value, which means you're opposing him. But otherwise, then why would you be criticizing the Vedas? I mean, Sandila not attaining the highest goal in the four Vedas studies the Pancharatra. But the highest goal in the four Vedas means the four Vedas mention the highest goal, but he's not attaining it from the Vedas. So that means the Vedas have already pointed it out. But being Aparavidya, naturally, then the highest goal is transcendence. That means you have to study Paravidya to find that absolute position of transcendence. So it's not a criticism, because the Vedas have already mentioned it, and whatever is there, the Pancharatra is based on the Veda. Because the Pancharatric scriptures are, if you take the Vedic literature and take out all the verses and everything that is dealing with the worship of Lord Vishnu, right? The philosophy, the worship, the position, anything that's dealing with Vishnu, and anything that directly supportive of that worship of Vishnu, that's the Pancharatra. Right, and all the things that are about the demigods, this, that, all that's removed, or anything that's not actually valuable for Pancharatra, that's not taken. So Pancharatra is only based on the verses of the Veda, but it's all focused on, like Bhagavatam, you see the Mahabharata. Then in the first canto, it's Mahabharata. But in Mahabharata, it's all about what's connected with the Lord and his devotees and that interaction, not other things. Right? So then because of that, then you see as you get the highest understanding. Right? So with that understanding, now you approach the Mahabharata, then you see things in the proper perspective. But if you don't, then you won't actually understand things properly. So Pancharatra is doing that same principle. It's transcendental. It's Paravidya. So the Pancharatra, the Bhagavatam, the Vedanta Sutra, these are Paravidya, transcendental knowledge. Like that. They're not Aparavidya. So the point is but that transcendental knowledge is already indicated in the Upanishads. It's saying that it's there, saying that you should try for that. So one who absorbs himself in that, one who makes that endeavor, one who gives up the material and goes for the spiritual, like that. That's what it says, but it's not giving you the process. The process is mentioned in the Pancharatra, right, and in Bhagavatam. Okay, so then the Acharya speaks, since there's no difference between the Shakti and the possessor of Shakti, the first criticism is refuted. Right, so he's saying that he has many qualities and all that, because they're looking at it, the Supreme is impersonal, so there's no qualities, but you're saying he has so many qualities, like that, you know, the person who's speaking it has so many qualities, and he's cool with that, but whatever. There's no fault in considering difference, since the Sarupa of the Lord is varying. In the second criticism, we say that this is not criticism of Vedas. Why? Vedas are simply difficult to understand, as stated in Bhagavatam. Kim vidate kim achashte kim anudya vikalpaye ityasya hridayam loke nanyo mad veda kaschana. What do the Vedas instruct as action? What is the final meaning of the Vedas? What alternatives do the Vedas raise? No one except me or my dear devotee knows the intended meaning of the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:21-42. So what's action? What's the final goal? What alternatives are there? Because, because action means action is based on the field. You have a field, then what you can do in that field, right? And then having that inspiration, that willpower. Right, so that's then the aspect that's there, is that willpower, thinking, feeling, willing. So Prajumna is that aspect of that willpower, having the right attitude, having the right, and then having that willpower to do something, to engage the senses. But that's based on the field. So if you say just action here, and the final meaning, but you don't mention the sambandha aspect. But I mean, as you're saying here, except for me or my dear devotee, no one knows the meaning, right? So then that's being referred to as that first part. So because you do an action in a field, you see a field, you're inspired to do a certain action, just like we see is the origin of that will be when you see Krishna, who is the Vishaya, and then seeing him, then that Udipan, well, that inspiration, then you have willpower, you want to do something, some service and all that. That's natural. Then performing that service, then you get results from that better for Krishna, right? So to please Krishna. So only devotees actually know what that means. The other schools, they do not know. Literally, they don't know. Like that. Means not that the particular scholar who or it's the sage who wrote them, he may know, but his only business is speaking up to that point. Right? Like you see what's his name? Lord Buddha. He's the Supreme Lord. He knows the whole process because, as it's mentioned here, only I myself and my devotees actually know the conclusion. So Lord Brahma, he knows the conclusion, right? But the people that he's dealing with, he can't give them the conclusion because as it is, they're already misinterpreting the Vedas so badly that the Vedas is about giving up material attachment and all that, and they're completely absorbing themselves in that. Completely, to the point where they're annihilating other creatures for their own sense of enjoyment. So this is completely against the Vedas. Right? And so if you bring up anything from the Vedas, they'll misinterpret it, right? They've been misinterpreting for so long, that's all they can do. So therefore he says, no Veda. Right? Okay, so now you have to start all over again. Be nice, be good, be peaceful. Be kind to other people. Don't bother other people. You have to start there. In other words, you're starting. The preaching is just pranamoy, just the social pranamoy aspect of dealing so that people can be nice. They can cooperate. The science, the arts, you know, the morality, these can be developed. So the focus is on morality like that, to cultivate that. And then as a goal, then there's just nothing. Right, because as soon as there's something, then their mentality is, then they have an idea of what to do with that. So then there's just nothing. Because if you say there's nothing, you don't speculate on trying to exploit the nothing. Right? You don't hear Buddhists trying to enjoy the nothing. They don't talk about, you know, the enjoyment of nothingness. Right? And so only that much is said. So same with these other sages. That Gotama, that in the process, you're going to use, you know, logic and that to apply what the Shabda says to your situation, right? Means if I'm in a situation, I have to work in a situation. So to work in that situation, I need to be able to apply what does the Shastra say about this situation and myself connected with that situation. But you don't see the connection. That's what Hanuman is for, right? It tells something. It tells about that and the place, or it tells about the person and the place, you know, or about the person and the goal. You have to connect all those together. That what is the goal in this place, you know, and what should I do? So that's what Gotama brings out. It's an important aspect, and that's all the farther he takes it. And so there are people that they are very much pleased with this much. Right? They're cool with this much. Like you see, the intellectuals, the logicians and all that, the mental speculators, this much is good enough for them. You know, then Vaisheshika, then, you know, you have the aspect, you want to move forward a bit with that. So then you understand, you have the analyst, but ultimately it's all just atoms. So if it's just atoms, then, you know, how you say, that brings about, then, you know, then, how you say, the understanding of the material world becomes based on the principle that it's all atoms, it's temporary. So you have to go for something beyond. But you're still going to use the logic. But you're going to use the logic and now seeing, okay, my situation, I'm doing what I'm doing, but ultimately there's something beyond. But that's all the more they mention, that there's something beyond. It's all just atoms. So what you see, it's just atoms. So it's not actually what you think it is. Right? It's there. It's real. It has potencies. But what you value, you give it, it's not actually there. Then you go on to Shankya, then they show the mechanics, not how you'll start to elevate yourself, right? The intellectual aspect that you have the 24 elements. And so through these 24 elements, you're going to see how you're going to take yourself step by step through the various paths that are there, through the different modes, through the senses and that, because you're taking is that you have, you know, earth, water, fire, air, ether, right? And then from that, you're going to get the sense object, and the working senses, right? So that right there is 20. That's the field you're working with. You see it in that. That's why it's always talked about control your senses. You don't have to, other things are included in that. Then you have the mind, intelligence, and false ego, right? So that's 23 elements. Then you add in the consciousness, the living entity. Right, so on the material platform, it's polluted, but on the spiritual platform, it's not polluted. Then you can come to the, you can transfer to the spiritual position. Right, so that's then what you're trying to accomplish there. Is that this is not how you're going to go. So the first two only show the logic and that it does have that temporary aspect, but they're not showing you mechanics how to get there. So then they're showing, he's showing the intellectual mechanics, how to analyze that. But then Patanjali will point out, but at the same time as you have that, but how? What's the controlling point of all that? You have the 20 elements of the sense and sense objects, right? And then you're going to have the intelligence which analyzes the ego, it's there, but it's the mind that controls the whole thing. So therefore, when the mind is brought under control, right, by what's that, pratyahara, right? Because the active element in yoga is pratyahara, right? We'll take it, oh no, it's the asan and, you know, the pretzelness of yoga, right? And so that's the important point. But no, it's pratyahara, the control of the senses, pulling in the senses. Only when you control the senses can you put the mind onto something else. If the mind is focused on the senses, you will not get focus on transcendence, right? And so transcendence means the super soul, because otherwise before this, you're not getting that understanding. I mean, Kapila Dev points it out. He points it out. And so therefore this process, it goes back to the Lord. And so it's a transcendental system. But that's in the Bhagavatam, right? But we're just talking about these sages when they're writing the things, right? And so then, yes, and so he brings out the mind and all that. But you see, in bringing in the mind, they're not doing any activity. They're just sitting there, you know, in their position of pretzelness, you know, and then trying to control the breath, control the mind, focus on the supersoul. But where they're going to go, it's still, it's not established that Vishnu is the supreme absolute truth. No, he's just the one you meditate on. So they've given that you meditate on Vishnu, right? Does that make sense? Right, that. And so then, okay, so you're doing that. So you see is what's happening here. What's going on here? This is all soft preaching, right? That's all it is. It's just soft preaching. But as Narad Muni points out, basically useless if you want to go back to God. So then Jaimini then comes along and shows, well, there's nothing action. The world's not going on. Is everybody going to sit down in the forest and all that? Okay, in Satya Yuga, they can do that. But they'll take it farther and go and meditate on the Supreme Lord as Godhead and become devotees and go back to Godhead. But you see, the others, they're not. They're getting distracted by their mystic yogis and all that. So he brings in that you're going to perform karma, right? And by performance of karma, in the sense of duty, then there's no material entanglement. It means bad material entanglement. They don't mind being involved in the material nature. The other ones are showing beyond. But here they're showing not. But it's stronger because the body, mind, words, everything are nicely engaged in whatever is your nature. So it's in a stronger position than these other four. But the result, even though there's the Supreme Lord, but he's bound by what our actions that we do. And he has to give things within the modes of nature. So again, not a proper understanding of the Lord. Then you're showing that, okay, but no, but that doesn't get you out of the material world. Therefore, then you need liberation. So then Shankaracharya then brings in that aspect of liberation, right? And so then with Vedanta, the Uttaramimamsa, then you're actually going to understand things properly. And by that process, then you're going to elevate yourself beyond the material. But he doesn't point out the Lord. So we see all these six schools. Like we know Shankaracharya is Lord Shiva. He's one of the ones who knows, right? So what is it? Shiva knows, Sukadev goes, Vyasa may or may not know, right? So we know after he was instructed by his spiritual master, then he knows, right? But before that, we see he also stuck to the soft preaching. And yes, it's nice, Mahabharata, all these things. You know, you have, you know, millions and hundreds of millions of Hindus who are favorable like that, situated kind of in the mode of goodness to some degree. I mean, previously a little bit more and all that, but not necessarily knowing what devotional service is, not going back to Godhead. So the point of soft preaching, it has its value in as long as it allows the devotees to come and actually preach properly. So if the devotees come and give soft preaching, how are they benefiting the people? You know, and at the same time as, oh, we don't want to disturb them with the Indian stuff, but the Indian stuff, like it or not, it's in the mode of goodness. What's in the mode of goodness in the Western lifestyle? Right? Is there any regulation? Right? There's on their foodstuffs, what they eat, what they wear, what they do, unless you get into the traditional kind of cultures. But if you're getting into the traditional kind of cultures, you don't need soft preaching. They can take it that these are rules. They know if I do this program, I dress like this. I go to this program, I dress like that. I don't mix the two. So therefore, there is a dress code. Right? And you get up in the morning, you're going to do this and that, you're going to, you know, do all the things that, you know, that you're going to take your bath or whatever it is you're going to do, you're going to dress like this, you're going to be there, you're going to be on time. So they understand regulation like that. They don't have a basis of regulation. It's just that's what's going on and that's what works. Right? And so that's what they do. And so therefore to them, you can talk straight. Right. And now the other group that doesn't necessarily appreciate this and so therefore once inspired in the soft preaching. But the point is, unless you're showing them the Vedic system, there's no chance in hell they're going to get to the mode of goodness. I mean, I can just say that bluntly. You're not going to take malechas and yavanas who are doing all nonsense and get them to the mode of goodness. Just because you do a little yoga or because you say, be nice and be good. Everybody's saying, be nice, be good. You know? And then Narad Muni pointed out the Vyasa that does not work. Where are the devotees? Right? And that those who are following that Vedic culture like that, yes, if they are, the more they're following, the more they're situated in goodness, but that doesn't mean that they're interested in devotional service. Right? And so that becomes the problem. So therefore it's direct preaching. So the point is the culture is there, then you can give the direct preaching. So if you're saying, oh no, but we'll bring him to that culture, that regulation, then the devotees can preach nicely. But the point is, without the Vedic system, how are you going to get yourself there? And even if you say, but we're in the West and that, okay, is everyone going to follow all the nice things and be good, be nice by what the, you know, what the Bible says? Are you going to start preaching the Ten Commandments? No, we're just going to just talk some new agey stuff and kind of make everybody feel good and haribol. Use a few proper, you know, new agey words and yoga words and all that, and then you're good. You know, use the right mood, give the right examples, you know, talk in the right voice, you know, how it's all, we do all this together, now everybody together, you know, now everybody breathe in, you know, breathing in now, you know, see that, you know, just everything inside is just disappearing, and it's just, you feel that greatness, that expansiveness like that. Hold it just like that. Absorb yourself in the moment and all that. Enjoy that. Now breathe out, you know, like this. And so what are you doing for them? Okay, they're getting an experience. Great. But if they don't get an experience of Krishna consciousness, they're not going to take to it. So just like, yes, they come to your yoga studio and your programs because you give them an experience, but they're only going to come to Krishna consciousness if you give them an experience. So all these systems that you can start there, you talk, bring it up, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is opening to rough night last night. So
oh, yeah.
Yeah, storm, huh?
Oh,
yeah, so the Bhaktivinoda Thakura in the Sikshamrita, he starts off, and in the first section, he just talks about God, the Lord, the Supreme. And he talks about, that's the funny part, is even before it's introduced Krishna, they've already talked about relationships with him and all these different things and the rasas and all those things. We think, oh, no, you can totally tell that later. Very interesting, because it's just the structure of it. You know, the form of it, the sambandha aspect of it, the acharyas have no problem discussing that. Then once that's interesting, then they show the all-attractive one means the Supreme is all-attractive to everybody. And that name for the Supreme as attractive is Krishna. Right? So then they'll refer to Krishna from then on. Now and again, they'll say Lord or God. It's dependent on the situation if they're dealing with an argument or something like that. And so we see is that the approach is very different. It's if you're going to establish them in goodness, you have to use the system that is in goodness to get them there. You can't use, means you can't, you know, with your hand, you can't clean your hands of blood with blood. Right? So the people are there for yoga and these other things just for their own material benefit. How are you going to give them something transcendental? Right? Just by talking that. You think, oh, no, but it's nice, it's different, it's new agey. Because in the modern context, pranamoy is considered spiritual. Right? You see is that basically all world religions, they just talk pranamoy. They don't talk beyond pranamoy. Now and again, they'll throw out something about God and this and that. But you do have the upper area of pranamoy, the highest level of pranamoy, then you're going to have an appreciation of a supreme, of God. But basically, the idea of God is imaginary. Because otherwise, what does God look like? What does he do? Is he a person? Is he just something pervading everything? Is he a feeling? Is he, you know, like this. So it's all just in the mind of the individual. It's not that there's a solid, here's God. Even though they may be open to, that's why you say the innocent. They're open to that God's a person and this and that. So it's a nice step. But if you have to understand is that they're not giving. So we see here is that these six sages that therefore documented or propounded the six schools of Vedic philosophy, they're just doing soft preaching, but each one is taking it to a different level. Right? But it works because they're all mundane. So the point is it doesn't matter what you do, at some point you have to switch to the transcendental. Otherwise, it's not transcendental. You know, as the saying goes, if it's not transcendental, it's not transcendental, right? You know, so that's the whole point, is that if it's not actually talking about the Lord himself as he is, you're not talking about the Lord as he is. You know, you can feel good that I give it, and I say, yeah, but that's just the motive. That's just yourself, possibly the motive for this. But what's your motive for doing that? So you'll be appreciated. So many people will come and will do that. I feel I'm doing something. Yeah, you know, 30 people come regularly to my program and all that. So have you introduced, you know, chanting or this or that? Oh, no. You know, it's only been 6 weeks. You know, we don't want to rush them and all that. 6 weeks? What are you talking about? You know? So you know, that's the whole thing. It's no, they just want to be impressed by Vedic jargon and stuff like this. And, you know, it's more of a cultural experience, but without culture, you know. So is it actually dealing? So that's the whole point, is they're doing that because then favorably they'll follow the culture. Because in one sense, just like that, guys at a yoga studio are happy for a Hare Krishna to come there and do a program, mantra meditation and spiritual food and stuff like that, as long as, you know how to speak in their language. But the point is that you have to bring it to spiritual. Otherwise, where's the spiritual? I mean, if you're doing kirtan, then that's great. But even some of them, I see, they don't even want to do kirtan. Oh, we want to hide it. So they'll do a Shiva kirtan or a Ganesh kirtan, as if the karmis know the difference. They're perfectly, they all know Sanskrit. They all know the background of everything. As soon as you say, oh, you're a Hare Krishna. You're the Vaishnav, you're this and that. Oh, we don't want all that. We just want this mumbo jumbo, you know, Hindu Bindu stuff. So therefore, let's do a Shiva kirtan, as if they know who Shiva is or Ganesh. You know? Like that, you know, or who Mirabai is. They don't know. The point is you just get music going, it's got a nice beat, and that people dance. Someone sent me, you know, last year, something, a group of two, I've seen two of them. I think Sri Prahlad showed me a group of Christians. And then they got out a whole scene, they're doing a kirtan, not with Hare Krishna. It's all like Jesus bhajans, like that. And everybody is chanting and dancing and like we do. They saw what we do and they just do the same thing in their own style. And then I saw one that was the most far up, was a bunch of, you know, seriously Orthodox Jews, you know, the guys with the things and the hats and the, you know, the funny clothes and all that kind of stuff, you know. And so then they're doing the same thing. They have some little thing of, you know, some repeated thing that's considered, you know, like a religious or kind of like spiritual little phrase, and they're just repeating it over and over again. And all the guys are there dancing with their hands up in the air and spinning around. So yeah, you can do, but unless you put the holy name that's come in parampara, where is the spiritual benefit? So the point is this is all soft preaching. They're simply trying to get them to follow the culture. And then what's the point of karma or jnana? Its only value is that you're in a position where they will listen to a devotee speak about transcendence. The karmis is pious, you invite sages, sadhus over to your home, naturally they're going to speak on some spiritual stuff, whether you care or not, or listen or not, or anything, that's another thing, but it's what you do like that. There'll be some puja, you do, you know, you feed them, you know, all that stuff. So they cook, it's vegetarian, yes, it's a spiritual program, it has to be. They're going to offer it to the deities, they're going to do the puja, oh, that's very good, very pious, we're going to get good credits for that. Then after you distribute the prasad, yes, that's very good. They're going to speak something on Bhagavad Gita and all that. Yes, you know, that's also very pious. We like that. You know, we've always seen that at programs we've gone to. So that's the advantage of karma, as the Vedas give it, because you're willing to hear about Krishna. And then you take the renunciates, then they were willing to have Lord Chaitanya come and speak. Right? He's a sannyasi, they're a sannyasi, and then they discuss Vedanta Sutra. But then Lord Chaitanya gives the actual thing. Same then with the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Then he gives that they speak on Shastra, you know, with all the logic and everything, and then he accepts. That's the only point that's of value in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, is that if you're following it according to Shastra, you're willing to accept the devotees as, you know, the brahminical and this kind of thing, and the sadhus, the saintly persons, and therefore listen to them. And when you listen, then you're going to hear the holy name, you're going to hear about transcendence, about the Supreme Lord, about Krishna. And then you'll actually move forward, and you'll then be able to transcend that dharma, artha, kama, moksha, and come to bhakti. That's its only purpose. The whole material world, its only purpose, all the arts and sciences and economics and politics and religion and philosophy is only for the point that the jiva can again take up his service to Krishna and go back to Godhead. There is no other purpose for the material world. Because you can say, no, but these we have to accomplish, and then where are those accomplishments? Where are they now? You know, where is that empire in Europe, you know, that Napoleon made? You know, where is that empire that Caesar made? You know, saying, where's the empire that the Kaiser had or the Tsar had? They're all gone. Where are they? Who has any idea where they are? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's just all gone. It's not for that. You can do those things. But the point is that someone who's more cultured and all that, he'll have a tendency to be more willing to listen and all that. But at the same time, is a honest or sincere soul or innocent soul can be anywhere in any position. Like we see, you know, Lord Chaitanya giving Magrari the hunter. Magrari the hunter, now he's the most extreme, you could say, example of the, you know, a fallen living entity. But because he was open to, you know, he was respectful to Narada. He asked him, why, you know, you're a sage, you know, you're kind to, you know, all living entities. Why are you bothering my occupation? You know? And so then when it's explained to him what's going on, then he's, oh, okay. And so he took it up. Right? You see the same with Dasaratnakar, right? Means who became Valmiki. Same principle. Narada Muni comes along. Because the one he's hunting, Magrari, is killing animals. The other one's, he's a dacoit. You know, so the hunter is going to be worse, especially because he's a hunter that only half kills the animals. So really bad. You know, it's another thing. You're a hunter, that's your livelihood. You just kill it. Right? Why you have them suffer? You know? So the whole point is these sages, they're disciples of Vyasadeva, so they know what to think, but they're only presenting this much. Then you get the conclusion in the Bhagavatam. And then in the Bhagavatam, that'll be the actual point. That'll be the real point of all this is for. That's why it's recommended, Varnashram, because Varnashram can hold together all the different stations in life, all the different mentalities, all the different religious processes. You know, like someone's into following the rules, someone's into not breaking the rules. You understand? It accommodates both. Someone wants to be in family life or not. Someone wants to be more intellectual or not, or more administrative or not, or more economic or not, or more artistic or not. It all fits. So it's just the use. So one can say is, oh, but then, you know, Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, they all say you can't use it in this age. Yes, you can't use it itself as a system of self-realization. But how much is useful and given by the acharyas, that much you follow, is scientific. Right? The modern culture also follows Varnashram, just not in a scientific way. If you tell anybody who's leadership in modern society that there's basically your intellectuals, your administrators, your you know, those who work with economics, and then those who are hired by everybody else, right? They won't disagree. And then within that, you have your varieties, but you use those. They're not going to disagree. You say you have students, and you have married people, you have retired people. You know, and for those who have it as monks or like saintly persons, that they'll be comfortable with that also. So the point is it's not scientific. Well, the Vedic is scientific. So this idea is, oh, we can't use this and that. No, you explain it as the science. And Prabhupada mentions that art means that you're using your intelligence, right? It's a man of here. As intelligence. This is the day before. Art. Ah, here, yes. Okay, this is from May 3rd, right? From Letter to Rupanuga, May 3rd, 1972. Krishna can change anything. Therefore, we worship him as the greatest scientist, right? You know, because the science means those, that the knowledge of those things that then can be applied to accomplish something. That's a science. If a man knows swimming, he can stay up. So if a man has this much power, what to speak of God? So we see that Ramachandra has the art how to make stones float. It is a question of knowing the art. Art means the display of intellectual energy. Everywhere we can see intelligence in everything, so the Lord knows the art of everything. So he can change anything, we cannot, right? So the art means the display of an intellectual energy. So the art is you're applying the science. Right? So it's the intellectual aspect. It means we put it more on the experiential. So it's the emotion, the feeling, you know, it's all about, you know, me and what I feel and others feel and this and that. But you still have to use your intelligence when you're applying the science. And that's the art. Right? Yeah. Yes. So we're good on that, that these six schools, they're just showing different levels going up like this. And Buddhism is like, they're just trying to make people humans. So it's the lowest. And voidism, that's even worse than impersonalism. Because at least impersonalism, Brahman, that is a feature of Krishna. Voidism, just there's nothing. That means there's no God, there's no energies, there's nothing. That's the worst. So they're just trying to make a little bit kind of human. Right, so that's all the farther they're taking it, but it's understood that you're going to go up. Now, all these are elements that are there within the Bhagavad philosophy. So if you understand the Bhagavad philosophy, you understand all these other systems. Right? So that makes sense. You know, just like it says here, no one except me or my dear devotee knows the intended meaning of the Vedas. So that means that whatever is there, the Vedas, since they deal with all knowledge, whatever knowledge is there, it's meant to know Krishna. That's the point. And so it's just showing the environment and the techniques that you can use to make transformations that get results. Like, I have knowledge and skills of the situation that will give me results. But the point is who are you and who are the results for? That's what the devotees know. So all apara vidya is simply different aspects of where to apply this transcendental aspect of sambandha abhidaya prayojana. But it's apara because the focus is on the technique. Like we saw in Natya Shastra, the emphasis is on the technique of the acting and music and dance, right? You know, drama, music, it's on the technique. But you see, it points out that it's for elevating the consciousness. But it doesn't say there that the consciousness should be elevated to the transcendental position. That it doesn't say. So the Shastra then you see is that all these Upanishads point out you have to go up to the transcendental position. But then that's not explained fully. So then Vedanta Sutra then establishes that means surrendering to the Lord. How do you surrender to the Lord? That's what Bhagavatam explains. Right? Right? Do we see the progression here? Right. So therefore, then when you're giving all the mechanical aspects of showing logically how human life is meant, what's consciousness for, how it's uplifting and all that, then that you can explain all these nicely. But at one point, you want to bring it to Krishna, bring it to the Absolute. Pancharatra is easy to understand since it clearly states the essential meaning gathered from the Vedas. Smritis and Puranas also have this quality. So, okay, this is from Skanda Purana. What is not seen in the Vedas is seen in the Smritis. What is not seen in the Smritis is spoken by the Puranas. The clever person who knows the Vedas and Upanishads, but does not know the Puranas, is not knowledgeable. Skanda Purana, Prabhasha Kanda, 290-93. Vedartad adikam manye puranarta puranartam varanane. O beautiful faced woman, I consider the meaning of the Puranas greater than the meaning of the Vedas, Naradiya Purana. Right? Because the point is it's everything's based on the Vedas. You have the Shruti, Smriti is then the discussions on the Vedas, and then the Puranas are showing how people have used and applied this in their life. Because unless you see people apply it in their life, how do you use it? Right? In the Upanishads, you see Nachiketa, okay. Nachiketa goes to get the earrings, you know, it's a dakshin for the guru's wife. Right, because the guru didn't want anything, but he said, you can ask my wife if she wants. He wanted these earrings that the king's wife had. So he's just going there and getting and all this and that, and then he was stolen by Takshika. Then, you know, then he's trying to dig with the stick, and I think it's Indra that empowers the stick with the Vajra. So you have far out stories, but you don't really necessarily bring out what's the attitude, how he's attaining something, how he's attaining the supreme. He's seeing all kinds of far-out knowledge, right? You know, he sees, you know, the day and the night. You know, he's, you know, someone's weaving cloth with a black thread and a white thread. That's the days and nights. He sees a spoke. I mean, a wheel that's got, you know, one hub. It's got 12 spokes and this and that. And, you know, so it's the years and months and all this kind of things. And so then he sees all these things, but where in there is something that you can use in your life? That's what Puranas explain. Same knowledge, right? That time takes away your life, but through day and night and through the months and the years, the days, months, and weeks and years. But you see it, how it's applied in the life of Puranjana, in the life of these other great personalities. So that's the point. Okay, now another doubt. But Vedanta finds fault in Pancharatra. You know, okay, before they were saying, you're criticizing the Vedas and saying Pancharatra is the thing, you know, and then you establish that. Now the guys, but Vedas, you know, that you've established Pancharatra, right? So now they say, no, but Vedanta finds fault in Pancharatra. So you're trying to throw out Pancharatra so you can go back to the Vedas. Not that you care about Vedanta. You know what I'm saying? So many times people will use a quotation that its only value is to defeat something else, but not that you actually care about it. You know, like anything that you want to get managerially done, you just say you're not the body. Right? You know, I don't really have the skill or nature. You're not the body, Prabhu. Oh, I'm so tired. I'm ready to die. You're not the body, Prabhu. You know, so the whole point is just to managerially get done what you want. Right? Not that there's not valuable situations where you're trying to point out to somebody who is on the bodily platform. But in here, saying you're not the body is not to establish the philosophy you're not the body and how to think of yourself as servant of the servant of the servant of the master of the gopis. It's about how to, you know, get off the floor and go do this work. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is they're doing the same thing here. They're saying, But Vedanta finds fault in Pancharatra. So then we can throw with Vedanta, which we don't care about, we throw out Pancharatra, and that leaves us with the Veda. And then we can be happy. Utpatya sambhava. Shakti is not the cause of the world, because it is impossible if Shakti creates the world. Brahma Sutra 2.2.42. Right? So here it is. It's impossible if Shakti creates the world. Brahma Sutra is pointing out. So, but they're saying it's because you're saying that the Lord and the Shakti are non-different, so the Shakti is carrying out the creation and all that. And so then you know, it's the Lord Shakti rather than it's just material nature taking care. So now you're pointing out this, oh, but Brahma Sutra doesn't accept that. Right? So then the Uttara. That is not so. These sutras are explained by Madhvacharya as a criticism of Shakta philosophy, not Pancharatra. Moreover, the ideas of Pancharatra are explained by Vyasa, the Supreme Lord, in Puranas also written by him. In many places, Puranas agree with the descriptions of Vasudeva and the Chaturvyuha found in Pancharatra. One sees many instances of Pancharatra's ideas of the Shrutis also. You were saying that this whole study of the Chaturvyuha and Vasudeva show as the Purushas and the Lord beyond that. That's going to be where?
To in the beginning of the next Sandarbha, Maharaj.
Okay, yes. What we see is that we're getting ready for this, is that, because in the Chaturshloki, Krishna's saying he is everything, right, and pervading everything, and then he is controlling everything, and in that way pervading through with his Shaktis. Right? In the second shloka. Then in the third, he says, I'm beyond that. So basically what's being established here is being brought to the point that the Sankarsha Prajumna Ani Ruda, being the Purusha avatars, they're what's talked about in these first two verses. But Vasudeva being beyond that in performing his, you know, Lila Purushottam, then he is what's beyond. Right, so you're getting this differentiation here. We've already established the others, and now you're being brought to the next platform.
And Maharaj, after that, when he started establishing as Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan, because it's in the third chapter of first canto, all first the Leela avatars are explained, and then Krishna is explained as Swayam Bhagavan. Now then, Jiva Goswami says this is the Paribhasha Sutra, based on which all the other verses should be seen. So that's why, because Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, now all the other aspects, the amshas, swamshas, the paramatma amshas, they all are the part of Krishna. And then the next adhyaya then goes on to elaborate on that, like, you may look paramatmas on their own, but how you have to look from the perspective of Bhagavan is elaborated from there on.
Yes, because Bhagavan takes that form of Paramatma to do work. But the point is Bhagavan, you know, in his end, he's independent. And so then, therefore, he's beyond the need to do all this work and all that. So simply because of his desire. So in other words, his desire, he's beyond, but at the same time as he's doing that work. So that's Paramatma. Okay. One sees many instances of Pancharatra's ideas and the Shrutis also. So, in other words, it's all there in the Shruti. Then you'll see it in the Smritis and the Pancharatras and all that. And then the Purana will be explaining, you know, more like that. And Vedanta Sutra is simply trying to dismantle any doubts that come up from these different ideas that, you know, Shakti creates the world on us. Shakti is independent. So even the Purusha coming from Shakti, right? Because that's the Shaktas, they think that you know, the Durga or Kali is the supreme, and that the manifestation of Krishna is just an incarnation of her potency. But the point is what's being pointed out, Shakti can't create the world on its own. Shakti has to come from Shaktiman. It has to be a direction. His energy doesn't do things on its own. Like, energy is just there, okay? But the electrician sets it up and now it heats things or cools things or makes your toast, you know, like that, you know, or makes this gizmo here work so we can talk to each other, right? And so that's there has to be intelligence behind the Shakti working, right? But the Shakti does this thing. So when the Shakti is, it by nature has the potency to perform things, but it has to be still be directed by the Lord. That's why that it has this particular consistency the way it is. Vishnu Purana also accepts that the one Lord has a form with qualities. The idea of Pancharatra are not criticized. Yana Shakti Balaishwara Virya Tejam Shesesha Sesha Taha Bhagavach Chabda Vachyani Vina Heyer Gunadivhi. The word Bhagavan means that he is complete with the power of mind, omniscience, power of senses, power of body, influence, control, and beauty, and is devoid of all inferior qualities. So here's an interesting is how these are brought out. Because you see, is when you have the six opulences, that means all opulences are coming from these six. So you just say all power, all wealth, all beauty, all knowledge, all fame, and all renunciation. And that covers everything, because you say those things, everybody wants those things. But you see in this verse, the same things are being mentioned, but they're being mentioned in the context of where they apply. So power of senses, that'll be Prajumna, power of body, you know, that will be Sangarshana, power of mind, that'll be Aniruddha, right? Then influence, control, and beauty, right? So then Aniruddha is going to have the beauty, because right means that the mind is in a good state, you look beautiful, the mind's not, you don't look beautiful. Light, then you're going to have the control, that's going to be power of body, and then influence, that's going to be the power of the senses. Right? So you see is that how then the three deities have all these six. So in that way, as you see, what is the power and then how it's applied? So it's the same six, just you're looking at it from a different angle. Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes it just lists them like that, and then sometimes it's showing how they have their effect. Because influence, control, and beauty, these are how things are affected. They're the nimitta. Right? So in other words, the power of the mind, power of the senses, the power of the body, that's the masculine. The influence, control, and beauty, that's the feminine. Does that make sense? So yeah. It is also said, yes.
So this power of mind means knowledge, and power of senses is corresponding to the renunciation. We give other definitions like knowledge, renunciation, then
strength. Yes, those are the standards. So this is just showing how they come in. How you have, what's it? Jnana and Bala. Right, then you have what's that? Aishwarya, Tejas, no, Aishwarya and Virya, and then you have Shakti and Tejas. So then those mean these six. At the same time, as those also mean these aspects like that.
Okay.
You know.
Yes.
Because you see, as they overlap, let's say someone's very beautiful, they can be very detached from the situation. You know, like you see, someone is very, very good looking and they know it. They don't have to acknowledge anybody, look at anybody. They just move around as if they're the only ones there and they can get away with it. That's the power. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the point. It comes from that. But at the same time, you say somebody who's not necessarily good looking, but they use that same attitude, it has influence. you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It is also said, Sankhyam Yogam Pancharatram Veda Pashupatam Tata Yanan Yetani Rajarshe Vidhi Nana Matani Vai. Know that Sankhya, Yoga, Pancharatra, Vedas, and Pashupata are various philosophies with various opinions, Mahabharata. Pashupata means the worship of Shiva. You know, the Shaiva, you know, how you say philosophy. The Lord also says in the Kurma Purana, Tasmat vai Veda Bahyanam Vanchanartaya Papinam Vimohanaya Shastrani Kareshyasi Rishad Tavaj Vishad Vaja Evam Sanchodito Rudro Madhavena Sura Rina Chakra Moha Shastrani Keshavopi Shive Stitaha Kapilam La Gudam Vamam Bhairavam Purva Pashchimam Pancharatram Pashu Patam Tatayani Sahasrasaha. Therefore, to cheat the sinful people against the Vedas, to bewilder them, I will make scriptures. Thus ordered by the Lord, Shiva made bewildering scriptures. The Lord was situated in Shiva. He also made scriptures for the Kapilas, Lagudas, Vama, Bhairava, sun worshippers, and Shiva worshippers. Right, so these are all these different varieties of ones that connect themselves back. So they're against the Vedas means they're against the idea that there's a supreme absolute truth. And that absolute truth is a person, and we being part and parcel of that person, we should worship that person. And therefore, whatever we have in our possession, we should engage in that way. So it's not about sense gratification, it's about pleasing the Lord. And in doing so, you'll become supremely happy. They don't appreciate that. They take it, oh, but you're renouncing everything, so you're against this world. You're against all these things. And so therefore, you know, you're opposed to what we're doing. But no, we're just using what you're doing in the Lord's service properly. You're following rules, you accept duties, but in so doing, you're just absorbed in materialistic activity. You're not actually coming to this, you know, the transcendental platform. And so then, to get these such mentalities to follow the Vedas, therefore then all these different ones are there. So these persons, then they're okay. You know, it's just like, let's say we go to Kumbh Mela. And we're at Kumbh Mela and all that. And so then at Kumbh Mela, they have their bathing days and times, right? And because there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of sadhus and millions of people, they have to have different times for different groups, right? And so, okay, this group will go at this time and this group will go at that time. Each group has so many subsections. So therefore, then in the subsection, in the section of the Tyagis who are renounced the world, the Vaishnavas are in that group, right? So even though they're not into Vaishnava philosophy in that, but they accept that they're part of the system. And so then the Vaishnavas are there and we do kirtan, you know, we're Hare Krishna, we do kirtan. That's just part of what they do, just like they'll sit around and have their chants or, you know, whatever they do. You know, they cover themselves with ashes and we chant Hare Krishna. You know, so it's all good. It's all, you know, part of the scene. So in this way, they get benefited. So because of this, they may be a little farther out on the edges, but still, they would accept. You know what I'm saying? If you went along and went to a camp of babas and all that, you could sit down there with them and you'd be part of the scene. You know? Does that make sense? It's just when they pass the pipe around, then you'll give that miss. That's all. You know? So that's the thing is that we're part of the scene because they identify with the Vedic scene. And so therefore, since the Vedic scene is about the highest position of developing prema for the Lord as a person, right? as Bhagavan. Therefore, the whole Vedic system, it's not that that won't be accepted by the lower positions. They may not agree with your goals and other things like that, but that you're part of the system, they don't have a problem with that. Right? So Krishna, how he's made the system, it's that there shouldn't be, there should technically be no problems, but because of mundane consciousness, everybody fights with each other. And so then there's a problem. Right? So he's caught the most wild people like that. Like you see these babas there that, you know, covered in ash, their hair is like, you know, 12 years of hair matted, and they're walking around naked, and you know, they're pretty wild. But they identify with the Veda culture. You know, otherwise, how are you going to engage people like that? So that's the whole thing. It's that, what's it? Bewildering, what was the term we used? Bewildering scriptures. You know, yeah, you become completely overwhelmed by, you know, Maya, but they follow the, you know, they have regulation. They all have guru, they all have shastra, they all have their sadhana, right? They all have an understanding of a process, you know, of a relationship process and goal. So all these fundaments of Vaishnava philosophy, without the Vaishnava understanding or attitude, they're following. It's like they're following the shell without the substance. It is said that if the scriptures of Shankara and others end in Bhagavan, then they are also pramana, but are not independent. The Pancharatra scriptures explain Bhagavan directly. Thus, Pancharatra scriptures are independent pramana. Right, so the others, if they have a point that that shows how you come to the absolute, like let's say in Patanjali, he'll talk about meditating upon Paramatma because he's the supreme. That verse itself will be taken and used as have evidence that you're supposed to worship the supreme. But the scripture itself is not independent. It's not that now you can take anything in that scripture, because it's dependent upon the Pancharatric scriptures or the transcendental scriptures, because they directly show that, right? So therefore, then the Pancharatra and the Bhagavatam, they can be used on their own without even having to discuss these other scriptures. So the other scriptures, you have to see them in the context of Bhagavatam and the Pancharatra, right? They do not indicate other entities like proclaiming Shiva supreme, which other scriptures do, means the Pancharatra. In Moksha Dharma, Shankya and other philosophies are explained to lead ultimately to Bhagavan. Right? They're ultimately for there, but they're just taking you a certain amount of steps. They'll mention about that, but then you won't hear any more about that. You know, just like in the Tamasic Puranas, then many times the acharyas have verses from there showing the supremacy of Vishnu. And he is the absolute. But you see in all of those scriptures, which will be hundreds of thousands of verses, then you only have a few like that. But the point is they do show. They do point it out. Everything points, just like in Manu, the opening verse points out that they want to know how Varnashram connects to Vishnu. Right? And in there, he'll be talking about worshiping, you know, the gods and all this kind of thing. But it may not directly point out all these things, but it's there. But you see it in the context of the independent scriptures like Bhagavatam. Then you actually understand how it in context and how it works the connection with the Lord. Yes? No? The knowers, so that's very important. Just because it has a verse, it doesn't mean we take the whole thing. So just like, let's say, we might be quoting from, some contemporary personality. They said something very nice. But it's nice because it explains something that's actually connected with the absolute truth. They may or may not know that. So it's not, now their teachings are not independent. So, oh, now we can study their teachings. No, it's not that point is all that's there. The knowers of Pancharatra explain the attainment of Bhagavan and say that Pancharatra directly indicates Bhagavan. Pancharatra would not be accepted if it advised worship of devatas. Rather, Pancharatra criticizes them. Shankyam yogam pancharatram veda ashupatam tata yanan yetani rajarshe vijidana matani vai. Know that Shankya yoga, Pancharatra, Vedas, and Pashupata are various philosophies with various opinions, Mahabharata. Shankya was spoken by Kapila. Though Mahabharata states this apparent criticism, it also says, Pancharatrasya Kritsnasya Veta Tu Bhagavan Swayam. The knower of all the Pancharatra is Bhagavan. Mahabharata 12. 337, 63. Pancharatra is greater than other scriptures. So in other words, Pancharatra is greater than all the Aparavidya, because it's Paravidya, because it's talking about the Chaturvyuha as Bhagavan. And from that coming to Vasudeva. So that's why you see in the Shris and them that they're always talking about that Mahanarayana. Right, you have the Vasudeva, the Shankara, but then there's Mahanarayana, who's beyond all that. He's the origin of all that. So you're trying to bring out that aspect. Okay. Sarveshu cha naripa sreshta ganeshveteshu drishyate yata gamam yata jnanam nishta narayana prabhu. Among all types of knowledge, Narayana is the conclusion of all scriptures and all knowledge. Mahabharata 12, 337, 64. Right. After showing that Narayana is the conclusion, it is said, Pancharatra vido yetu yata krama para nipa ekanta bhavo pagatashte harim Pravishanti vai. Oh no, it's Te Harim Pravishanti vai. O King, the knowers of Pancharatra, possessing full prema for the Lord, attain him. Mahabharata 12, 337, 67. So then the conclusion is saying all these, they have different opinions, but of that, then Narayana is the thing, so therefore the Pancharatra is about Narayana, so it's superior. The above verse explains the result of knowing Pancharatra. The one Lord superior to other is worshipped by all the Vedas and Itihasas, Pancharatras and Puranas, because he's endowed with all qualities. Bala Veya Shruti, quoted by Madhva in commentary in Brahma Sutra 336. The Rig Yajra Samana Tarva Vedas, Mahabharata, Pancharatra, and the original Ramayana are called Vedas. The wise know that all Vaishnava Puranas are self-proven. One should not consider them otherwise, a Vishu Purana. The Lord praises Pancharatra. So the Vedic, they establish themselves. They're not based on others. Because sometimes someone will say, oh, but in this Shastra says this, and that one says this, Bhagavatam says this, but you know, in the Vastu Shastra it says this and all that. But the point is no, Vastu Shastra has to be supporting, Bhagavatam, the transcendental literatures. Its only purpose is how you build the temple and everything around that. And then around the temple is going to be the city. And in the various buildings that are connected with the temple and the worship, then there's going to be the house. So it's all based off of the deity and how everything expands from the deity. Because when you apply the Stapana Veda, you start with the deity and the size of the deity, that makes the deity room. That makes the deity room means what's going to be the temple, how tall and everything is like that. That makes how big the courtyard is, how big the Garuda Stamba is and the flag and all these things and then how big the gate. So everything's based on that. Bigger the deity, bigger the temple. Smaller the deity, smaller the temple. So it's all based on the deity. Then everything goes from there. We're saying, oh, but in the East is this and that. Those are there. But why is that like that? It's because the Lord and his associates. He's surrounded by his eight Shaktis. And so their direction, that's what goes on in those directions. That's where you serve the Lord from. In the center is the Lord. Right? That's why the center is always empty in the mundane things, because that's the place for the Lord. Right? So we see is that you can't use the aparavidya against the paravidya. No, those verses that are showing the transcendental position of the Lord and anything connected with that, that's what's useful. But if it's not, it has no purpose at all. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.